Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. October 9, 2017. Tragedy in Las Vegas. Question: what are your thoughts about the terrifying events that shook American society as yesterday's shooting rampage in Las Vegas? A CBS News executive wasn't embarrassed to write on her Facebook page that she was not sympathetic to the victims of the mass shooting in Las Vegas. "I'm actually not even sympathetic, because country music fans often are Republican gun totters," former executive Haley Jeftman Gold wrote, The Hill. Answer: it's telling that such examples of behavior are coming specifically from the side of the so-called liberals. This shows what an upside-down world we are living in, according to definitions. The so-called liberals, Democrats, and socialists are in reality the biggest Nazis and people haters who are not concerned with anything other than the celebration of their own ideas. In the past, this wasn't called liberalism, it was called something completely different. I grieve for all the victims of this horrible crime and empathize with the pain of their families and friends. Unfortunately, I can only repeat that everything depends on our unity. Only this can bring peace to American society, a society which today represents modern Babylon and consists of representatives of all the nations of the world. As at one time Abraham wanted to unite all of ancient Babylon on the basis of love that would cover all transgressions, so it is in modern America. Unity is the only answer. In essence, this is exactly what Trump was talking about, promising to make of Americans one united nation. But, unfortunately, this promise is, as yet, only words. From the lesson Mutual Guarantee, October 3, 2017. Each soul is individual. Question: will I lose my individuality after uniting with other souls? Answer: each soul is absolutely individual. When we talk about uniting with other souls, we mean in a general movement, a common effort. But by this, each individual soul does not dissolve into other souls. Even if we speak in these terms, the emphasis is on the united effort toward a single goal. From the lesson in Russian, the 14th of May 2017. Holidays, stages of correction. Torah, Deuteronomy 31:10-31:11, then, Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at an appointed time, in the festival of Sukkoth, after the year of release, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord, your God, in the place he will choose, you shall read this Torah before all Israel, in their ears. Self-examination, examination of your own negative, egoistic desires occurs prior to the new year, Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of correction. Judgment Day, Yom Kippur, is the next stage. And the final correction occurs on Sukkot. This is Hibbuk Shmal, embrace from the left side, and Hibbuk Yamin, embrace from the right side. In other words, the drawing together of the Creator and the created being. Their complete union is symbolized by the last day of the holiday of Sukkot called Simchat Torah, rejoicing of the Torah. From CapTV's Secrets of the Eternal Book, the 23rd of January 2017. The World at the Crossroads, Part 4. Today the world is returning to the dark times of fascism, which will bring great suffering not only to the Jews, but to absolutely everyone. On one hand, unification based on egoism, called Nazism, unites nations and states, but each within itself. It cannot last long and ultimately collapses because it connects people only in the common hatred of someone else and does not build an internal unity. It is like the mafia, which is strong by its unity, because it allows it to beat everyone else. But this unity is based only on hatred, not love. This is precisely how the path of light differs from the path of suffering, Unity is based on love. Therefore, narcissism cannot last long and eventually ends in crisis. However, today it is developing in Europe and the USA. And then they will be followed by Latin America, Venezuela, Brazil, Argentina, as well as Canada, which also came very close to it. Question: what is the difference between narcissism in the United States and what happened in Europe? Answer: the US will continue narcissism, which was in Europe, in a more developed, aggressive, and cohesive form. America has the forces and foundations necessary for it. Nature has long been preparing this bomb, which will certainly explode. Many white Americans feel discriminated against since the 1950s, when the talk about equality between all races and communities in America began. They will serve as gunpowder for a big explosion. Balhar Sulam gives a very precise definition of our egoism in the article, Peace in the World: all the creations of the world are similar in that everyone seeks to use all others for their own benefit, applying all the means at his disposal and completely not considering that they are building their own well-being on neighbor's property destruction. Therefore, when egoism grows to a certain level, we need to take care of its correction. Either it will lead us to collapse, or we will bring it to correction, one of two. Before Abraham's time, egoism developed latently, in a latent period. But at some point the disease suddenly spreads, and we need to neutralize it very quickly. This is what occurred in the time of Abraham. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, the 21st of August 2017, lesson on the topic, Europe at a Crossroad. New Life number 893. The Right Attitude Toward Ego.
Hello and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Talman Delbaum Ben Moshe. Hello. Today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about the ego. What is a good ego? What is a bad ego? How can we use this force in a balanced way for it to make our life much better? Tal, please. Yeah, the wisdom of Kabbalah has a very special approach to the ego. It says, on the one hand, that the ego is a very good thing, and if we use it correctly, it could bring us to great achievements. On the other hand, we have to know how to get rid of our ego that as if incarcerates us and really makes us miserable. And so today we'd like to see, how do we work with these two forces, the ego on the one side and our desires to free ourselves of it on the other side. And I see that you have a very special method about how to work with people's ego. Sometimes you can really encourage people, empower them. On the other hand, sometimes you can really hurt their ego. You as a psychologist are envious. Yeah, both envious, and also as a person with a very sensitive ego. I'd really like to know how to correctly relate to our ego so that beyond the sensitivity and the fear of being hurt, how can it advance us correctly towards the good that you're talking about? So, from your perspective, how do you see this thing called the ego, and how do you relate to it in order to help a person advance? Okay, thank you for the question. I'll try, and you guide me through. So first of all, the wisdom of Kabbalah does not relate to a person's ego negatively. Not at all. I'm talking specifically about the wisdom of Kabbalah, not about religions or beliefs or mysticism or anything else. But everything there is in a person is good. This is the substance that we have to take man himself. We have to start working with it and turning him into an Adam in Hebrew, which means human being. Because when a person is born, he's a small beast, a little savage, an egoist, thinking only about himself, egoistically. And that's that. I have a body, and I'd like for this body to feel as comfortable as possible, to feed it, lay it asleep, have it listen to something nice, look at something nice, eat something sweet, and also feel safe, that I know that no one will hurt me and that I'll exist in a good and nice way. And that's all the simple ego wants. Then we see that it's not enough for the ego, because we develop. And then, suppose at the ages of 11, 12, we get a sexual drive. So we have to calm it down somehow at a certain point. Then there's competition. Who's more, who's less, who's healthier, stronger, prettier, who's not, and so on. Then, in terms of pride, meaning no longer sex or beauty, but intellect, emotions, social status. Ooh. This is a very essential, great big ego. And so on and so forth. If we do not correctly educate a person as to how to use all of these urges, these desires, then a person is under the pressure of these urges that tear him into pieces. And therefore, it's important for us to begin with the right education as early as possible. Starting when? Even before the child's born. Because even in the mother's womb, there too a person feels and can start learning and receiving our entire method of the wisdom of Kabbalah. Truly so. It all depends on the environment that he's in. And the environment is extremely important. And just like a person needs to develop in his mother's womb, he also has to develop with his mother in the right environment, and we see it also from our researches, that both in music, hearing, other things, it's known and clear. And the entire education that we have to pass on to the child has to correspondingly be in order to give a person the tools. At first, a person doesn't have the intellectual tools, but only responses. So we have to tame them like we tame animals, that if you do this, you get that. If you do something else, you get a different response. And then from these entries and exits, that he influences society and gets a response, it programs him. It's kind of an inner programming. And that enters a person's mind, and by that, gradually fills one's inner program. Whether we want it or not, this is how our life's arranged. And children learn this way. Can you give an example? Anything. For sure, you see it on your child. How much he learned from you. Things that this is worthwhile doing, this isn't, and so on. Because his ego that propels him to be in the best possible state, in the most comfortable state in any given moment in life, also remembers that this is good, this isn't, and so on. It's worthwhile, it's not. And this is how it is in our inner program called the healthy ego. Healthy meaning that it's worthwhile for me. I don't see that it's healthy. I simply see that it's healthy, so to speak. And this is how it manages itself. Because its inner program is to suffer as little as possible and to enjoy as much as possible in any moment in life. And if it develops itself and becomes smarter, then not only in every moment in life, but also in the future and as far as possible and in accordance with the environment and all the means and so on. Meaning, I'm already taking into account everything that I have in order to promise myself a life full of pleasures, according to the best of my understanding, according to what I determine as necessary. Now the question is, how can we develop a person so that in terms of receiving pleasure, he will want something good? Not only that he'll feel good and he won't suffer from the environment, not to suffer from the environment. For this, you can live on the street. No one touches you, you have a bench of your own, things. A person as if lives in heaven. He'll always have what to eat, he'll always get along, he has no pressures, no obligations. Why not live such a life? Or, on the contrary, maybe he'll have to care for himself and society and for everyone, and this will fulfill his life. So, we have to see between these two extremes what is good for a person. It says, educate a child in his own way. So, first of all, we have to see how much can we develop him, and in what direction should we develop him. And therefore we give him what the wisdom of Kabbalah recommends, a general education, so he'll know what is man living for, and what is the general program of nature. What is that force of nature called the Creator? Because nature creates us, controls us. So what is that force? The only one existing force. What does it want of us? Is it enough for us to exist like any other animate creature? Wherever it was born, it lives precisely according to its nature that instinctively controls it, and this is how it lives its life. Or we, as human beings, we have to work with the program of nature in mutuality, where on the one hand, nature programs me, giving me different urges. On the other hand, according to these urges, I have free choice. Where will I live? In what way? What profession will I have? What family? And in general, what is my life for? The way I live, my children, my profession, all these things, this is this life. As long as I live. But besides that, there's a higher, upper life in which I start examining. In what way, with respect to the general program of creation that's called God or nature, in what way do I live with this program that programs me, that leads me all the time through the different paths of life? I want to get to know this program. I want to get to know the different ways. I want to be in interaction with it. I want to have a mutual interaction with the upper force that accompanies me, that controls me. I want to feel it, not for it to control me instinctively, that I get up in the morning, I have certain thoughts, I have certain desires, I have different urges, work, phone calls, home, children, family, different things. I want to know the system that I live in that is constantly working on me from all sides. What's the use of all of these inputs that I feel that all pressure me? What do they want from me? Were I to know that I'm in the general system of nature and how all this works on me, in what direction, towards what goal, then things would have been much easier, both to use my life in the safest possible way, to advance without getting blows, maybe being able to advance and benefit, not at the expense of others, but to have a good and nice connection with everyone. This is the safest way to exist. And therefore, I have to learn the program. Learning the general program of nature is called studying the wisdom of Kabbalah. And then, from the study, we learn about the program itself and its purpose regarding the development of man, both my own individual development and also the development of humanity as a whole. How can I realize this program? What are the changes that I can introduce into this program in order to exist in it in the right, correct, best possible way? And all this we get from the study. So a person who studies the wisdom of Kabbalah, still his ego is sensitive to what society says and so on, of course, and much more than the ordinary person. So this is what I want to know. How do you cope with the fear that our ego creates? What will people think? What will people say? What do we do in order to advance correctly and to be able to advance others too? Instead of connecting with a thousand different factors that we have in life, house, children, family, work, nature, my health, different occurrences in life, on the road, and so on. Instead of that, I connect to the wind force that controls everything, and then when I connect to it, the main thing for me is to constantly be connected with it and to understand that my thoughts, my desire, my urges, everything that happens with me in every given moment and with my environment, not in regards to what arises from within me all the time, but all the different responses, influences that I get from the outside, all this comes from one force. And I have to be connected with that force. And what about a person's behavior, that he has to act, talk, behave in a way that will advance certain goals? So this is first of all what I have to be. I have to be in contact with none else besides him, which is the central force of nature, of the entire existence, that besides him there's nothing else. He controls everything, that just like he has advanced this and developed this for billions of years till the current state, the very same way he'll develop me from this moment to the next. This sounds very passive. Incorrect. Because here there is a new approach to life, that if atop everything that happens to me in all the different occurrences of life, I connect with the force that operates me, then this way I truly advance my life in the best possible way. Because what happens? I'm in the right, current place. This force, the general force of nature, it brings about the different external occurrences and brings about different inner occurrences. It does it all. If through all of my inner occurrences and external occurrences I constantly direct myself at it, then I'm in contact with it through everything that I call this world, me and the environment. I connect to it, to that governing, planning, programming force that operates all of reality, including myself, and then I'm in a state where I am in mutuality with that force, what we call adhesion. And then, in every given moment, this is my work, and that's it. And what do I achieve as a result? By that, what I achieve is that in every given moment, I am with the source of my life, and that's all I need. But what about livelihood, relationships? I have to do everything in life like everyone else does, but if I connect to that force through all of these internal and external occurrences, I know how to behave. I'll give an example. Suppose Owen has to give a presentation at work, even about Kabbalah, it doesn't matter, but he has to stand in front of an audience and give a presentation, a lecture. So how is he supposed to work with that one operating force? For it to be successful. Of course he has to be proficient, but we're talking about the approach. It's not that what I said rids a person of being a doctor, a lawyer, an economist or something. He has to know these things. But the way he activates himself and the way he is towards others, he operates himself through all the internal and external occurrences, all of these clothing called this world from within oneself, operating oneself in order to connect with the upper force, because the upper force arranged this wrapper called this world for him, arranged him from within in terms of all of his desires, and then, in return, through all of his desires and the external world, he relates to the upper force, closing this loop, the circle. In any other way, we'll constantly err in life the very same way humanity does to this day. Okay, stage fright is maybe the greatest fear that a person has. How does a person that has to stand on stage now and talk to an audience, how does he overcome this fear by connecting to the upper force? No problem, because what is an audience? I connect to that upper force. What do you mean connect? It means that I'm in contact with the upper force that built this entire situation for me, the situation in which I am right now, and that now I'm responding back to it. I'm telling you, from the way I appear on stage, and it doesn't matter where. I talked before an audience of 2,000 people in the U.S., in Tokyo before an audience of 5,000 people, and when we have one of our congresses here, then it's 7,000 or 8,000 people. But it doesn't seem that you have stage fright. This is how it seems, because I know who am I connecting to, what am I doing, by character. Do you have stage fright? I don't know. I think that to begin with, I did have... You did have fear. Yes. So what strengthens you? That I am realizing the program of creation. But practically, what do you do? I know, where did I get all these tasks from? And who am I working with in return? There's no audience before me. Before me, there's only the upper force that arranges all these conditions through which I have to connect to it. None else besides him. So a person has to persuade himself that this is how it is before he gives a presentation. At least persuade, and later on he'll even reveal it. So what is this process of persuasion? Suppose there is a person who relatively feels stage fright. Suppose more than the average. Now, he's watching our show, and he says, great, Dr. Leighton said that the thing that gives me strength before I appear before an audience, I connect to the one force, and it helps me. Great, so he wants to do the same. He's not as great as Dr. Leighton, but he's watching, and the question is, how does he do it on the most basic level? Look, mister, we're not selling any kind of instant solutions here. First step, not something instant. I don't want to be on your level. Obviously, Dr. Leighton invested many years in it. No, it's not an express action. You have to learn how to do it. But really, it's a method. And the method isn't just about talking to an audience. No, I just gave an example. It's about everything in life. With your wife, with your children, with your boss at work, to study something, not to study something, buy something, not to buy something. You know, a person has a million different fears, and it constantly influences them. Right. So I understand there is a learning process here. I don't say give me 10 tips and let's go to sleep. But the most basic thing, that if this is how I direct myself, I'm at least in the right direction. A person has to learn just one thing, that in nature and in a person's life and a person's environment, in all these things, there's just one force operating, and he has to be connected to that one force. And then, depending on the extent of the connection, he has no one or nothing to fear, because everyone else, they're just puppets through which that one force works on him. And if a person already succeeded in coping with this fear, he did what he had to do, but he got a negative response, what should he understand as a result? He has to learn. No other way about it. He has to learn that our entire life is built just for one goal, for us to be able to connect to that one only upper unique force that exists in nature, that it itself is nature, and to learn how to connect to it. This is our life. This is the purpose of our existence. So going back to the place we started, a person has to reach a state where he can really connect with upper force and learn how to work with it, obviously. But isn't it better for a person to reach a state where he has a healthy ego, he's not really afraid to talk to an audience, he can relatively simply realize his desires in this world regarding his basic needs? If we raise children, isn't it preferable for them to have these things until they start working independently? Maybe you're right. Maybe it is so for children, but we're not talking about children. Maybe you're dealing with children, and so it's important for you. I'm not talking about children. I'm talking about grown-up children. So, okay, suppose a person comes to you and he didn't receive the correct treatment in life. Should he have some kind of psychological tools that will help him compensate for it? No. I don't think so. I don't think that this psychology can help a person at the age of adolescence and on. I don't think so. It can be in limited cases, very clearly defined cases, but actually, no, because our entire life is aimed at searching for contact with the upper force. Because from what I understand, the upper force took us through this process up till now, and it's not by chance that we are the way we are. Right, and therefore, only by being in contact with it can we balance ourselves. Last question. A person's connection to that one force that controls his entire life and creation in general, is it also kind of an ego? Because you told us that a person's ego develops from the simplest ego, where a person just wants to feel convenient, to a bigger ego of sexual drive, pride, intellect, social status, knowledge. So how would you define this ego you've just described? As a great big ego, that I want to be in contact with the one unique and unified force that controls everything, revolves everything, that's called God. The comprehensive nature, of course, it's a great big ego, but I have no choice. I have to be in contact with it. So, all in all, the ego is a force that advances us through different stops, through a kind of journey from the most basic animalistic stops, food, sex, and so on, to more developed things. And at the end of the ladder of our development, what is the last, the highest stop? If I connect to that great, big, central force of nature, the one unique and unified force, that there is none else besides it or besides him, I start learning from him that I have to become like him. And then I start changing. And the form of confidence that I had, in which I simply wanted to belong to him, it turns into a different kind of confidence, to become like him, similar to him, and then I really grow. And a person's ego advances him towards this all the time. We need the ego all the time. Only it takes on a different form, upon which I build the form of bestowal, the form of love of others instead of self-love, and this is truly the real confidence. Dr. Lightman, our time's up. Thank you very much for being with us. Thank you, Tal. Thank you for being with us. Until next time.